Well, thank you, Mr. Summers. Appreciate that solo. It's a new hymn, I think, for a lot of people. So getting used to that one. All right. It is a pretty song. We just have to get used to it, don't we? I'd like to begin reading a poem to you today. Some of you might be familiar with it. It's written by John T. Reagan. Does that ring a bell to anyone? Probably not. Okay, at least one. It's titled From His Tail to His Snout. Does that sound familiar? Okay, not yet. Some, to some maybe. It was written well over 100 years ago, and you might enjoy it. Do you think, brother, that in God's great plan, when he was prescribing the best food for man, that he made a mistake in leaving the swine out? For he was not good from his tail to his snout. Oh, the carcass of an old dead horse or cow, don't get too rotten for a dirty old sow. Though we holler a lot about boils and gout, we eat Miss Piggy from her tail to her snout. This was, of course, before Jim Henson and the Muppets. Miss Piggy was not part of his thinking here. We couldn't eat the buzzard, we'd think it a crime. But how much more filthy is he than the swine? That we make into pie or we cook him with kraut, and we eat him or die from his tail to his snout. We cook him with cabbage, we boil him with greens, with his mangy old hide we season our beans. With his scabs and his boils within and without, sweet piggy we eat from his tail to his snout. On filth they feast, while in stink holes they lay. And still for their carcass our money we pay. For their carcass our money we pay. The preacher, professor, the judge on this bench, eat the carrion eater his filth and his stench. In the filth you can see him clear up to his eyes, his slimy old carcass all covered with flies. Most dead with cholera, due to butcher no doubt, we still think him good from his tail to his snout. That's the first six verses of about 20. So I will spare you the rest of it and jump toward the end. You may think of fresh pork as a very rare treat, but our bodies are made of just what we eat. And the food he has eaten, the filth of the land, goes into our body as food secondhand. No wonder we're weak and heartbeats are slow. Sanitariums full, hospitals overflow. For we eat such unclean, abominable things that are creeping, crawling, or flying with wings. God forbade us to eat these dirty old creatures, no matter what the theory of preachers. If left to man's opinion, we'd not know the right. But thank the Lord and his word, there is light. And now, my brother, you may no doubt recall, indulgence of appetite caused Adam's fall. Our Savior was tempted on this point, no doubt. Then why do we eat him from his tail to his snout? Now I've told you my story, recited my piece. If you can eat pork with your conscience at ease, if sin, filth, or disease you care little about, keep on eating this brute from his tail to his snout. Are these the ramblings of a man who has a particular problem with pigs? An avowed hog hater? Or is there something more under the surface? And how does this apply to a Christian today? I'd like to examine today with you what the Bible teaches about clean and unclean foods. We'll examine what the Bible says about these dietary issues and some simple points that will help reinforce what we believe to others who might question it. Now, I'll begin by simply saying oftentimes it seems that the food laws of the Scripture might be some of the best kept laws in the Church of God, and frankly, by those who may no longer be a part of the Church of God. I know individuals, and you might as well, who have abandoned the teachings of the church many decades ago, but still refuse to eat pigs. You think, something's wrong with this picture. our understanding of clean and unclean meats, while it is a law that we'll come to see, really in one sense is representative of a relationship with God, not a law to be observed apart from that relationship. It's interesting. We'll talk more about that as we go along. Point number one, God determines what is good. Since God is our creator, since he made everything on the earth, as we know, everything in the water, everything under the heavens, everything on the earth, we understand that he has the right to determine what is good. Turn with me to Leviticus chapter 11. Dr. Levy has recently covered this in the Bible studies on the book of Deuteronomy. We'll look at it here first in Leviticus chapter 11. Now, some will say that simply this was God's instruction for Israel. Now, it's interesting that we could pretty clearly say that God's instruction to Israel is always very logical. It's always very reasonable. God says, you know, when someone is really, really sick with what was then an incurable disease like leprosy, God said, you know what you need to do? Put that person out of the camp because they're going to be contagious. That's a very reasonable and logical decision so that they don't infect others. So likewise, we say the same thing. When you're sick, we love you, but stay home. Don't bring the sickness and spread it to everybody else here. It's a bad idea. It's very reasonable. And yet, all of those reasonable things somehow get tossed out the door when it comes to this topic. Oh, no, it's not reasonable for God to say, don't eat certain things. All God meant by that is he wanted his people to be different. Well, do you take the laws of quarantine and put them in the same category? And say, oh, no. God doesn't mean you should actually quarantine people who are sick. That was just so Israel would be different from the other nations. Does that reasoning make sense? Does it make any more sense with this? That's how it's often reasoned. Oh, no. God just wanted his people to be different. Wanted them to be holy or separate. Therefore, he said, don't eat these things. But there's no real reason behind this instruction. Does that make sense? Well, no, it doesn't. Now, there are others who simply refer it to, well, this is Moses' ideas. Well, here in verse 1 of Leviticus chapter 11, the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron. So it was not Moses' idea. I would imagine some of these things that are on the list here might have been delicacies. In Egypt, very possibly. My wife tells the story of before her family came into the church. One of the delicacies around this time of year was pickled pig's feet. Wow, that sounds so delicate. So would some of these things have been eaten by the Egyptians, been eaten by Israelites in Egypt? Very possibly. But God speaks to Moses and Aaron, saying, here's what I want you to tell the children of Israel. Verse 2, speak to the children of Israel, saying, these are the animals which you may eat among all the animals that are on the earth. So God defines what is clean and what is unclean. Now, first, he does not say clean and unclean. He simply says, I have a list. Now again, does it make any sense that the only reason God gave this to Israel is so they would be different from all the pagans around them? Does that make any sense at all? And yet that's the reason that's so often given. God just wanted his people to be different. Why didn't he just say, you know, wear red clothes every day of the week and that'll make you different? Why this dedicated list of foods? Well, because God designed some things to be eaten. Among animals, verse 3, whatever divides the hoof, in other words, having cloven hoofs, That doesn't mean hoofs with cloves as a spice, by the way. That means a split hoof, as you know. Whatever has a cloven hoof, and chews the cud that you may eat. So there would be animals that Israel and others would come in contact with over the generations that would not be on this list specifically. Now, God gets very specific about some things that you can't eat, some things you shouldn't eat. But there would be other animals off into the generations that judgments would have to be made. So God gives these very basic requirements, saying if it has a cloven hoof, splits the hoof, not like a horse's hoof that's all one, but like a cow's hoof that's divided in the middle. When you have that, and if it chews cud, go ahead and eat it. So general rules. So there must be something about animals that have a cloven hoof and chew cud that makes them different from the other things that are on the list. And of course, science divides these animals into separate categories, not just because of hooves and cud, but because of the way these bodies are put together, the way these bodies process foods that they eat. Nevertheless, verse 4, you shall not eat among those that chew the cud or those that have cloven hoofs the camel, because it chews the cud but does not have cloven hooves, has more pads on its feet. It is unclean to you. So now he gives some samples, some examples. Oh, by the way, camels, yeah, chew cud, but they don't have part two, the cloven hoof. Now again, does this make any sense? If it's just, well, you know, God wants Israelites to be different from all the pagans around them. So by the way, don't eat camels. Doesn't make any sense. There's a reason behind these things. And as we heard in a few weeks ago in a sermonette by Mr. Gabel, it's the rock Hyrax. Because it chews the cud, but does not have cloven hooves. It's unclean to you. The hair, because you get hair balls. You know. No, rabbits. Rabbit, because it chews the cud, but it does not have cloven hooves. It is unclean to you. So if you have a rabbit's foot, anyone as a kid ever have a rabbit foot for good luck? We used to have those, I don't know. Where it wasn't very good luck for the rabbit, but apparently somehow it's supposed to be good luck for you. Once we came into the church, you know, no more rabbit's foot. I mean, they used to have little metal tops that they put on them and a little chain through there, and you could carry them on your keychain. How that ever got to be a good luck charm, I don't know. But nonetheless, the hare, the rabbit, because it chews cud, but does not have a cloven hoof, so that's unclean to you. So he gives these examples. And by the way, verse 7, the swine. Though it divides the hoof, having cloven hooves, yet it does not chew the cud, it is unclean to you. Now you'd have to wonder, if for those who simply say Moses came up with a list of stuff, does any of this make any sense whatsoever for somebody who's just going to put together a list of stuff? Well, no, you'd want those pigs. They get nice and fat. And there's lots of meat on those and a lot of other stuff as well. But boy, why wouldn't you eat those? So to think that somebody just kind of decided on a list just doesn't make any sense. So verse 8, their flesh you shall not eat. And their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you. We'll talk more about that in the future. Then we get instruction about water life, life in the waters. These you may eat of all that are in the water. Whatever in the water has fins and scales, whether in the seas or the rivers, in other words, fresh water or salt water, that you may eat. And we're all familiar with that instruction. It's not news to any of us. But all in the seas or in the rivers that do not have fins and scales, all that move in the water or any living thing which is in the water, they are an abomination to you. Well, that's an interesting thing. Again, does this make any sense if somebody just decided to come up with a list of all the things in the oceans? All the things in the water has to have fins and scales. Now, it does beg that somebody knew something about all these creatures and is now giving helpful instruction for the protection of the people. Verse 11, they shall be of an abomination to you. You shall not eat their flesh, but you shall regard their carcasses as an abomination. So, is it possible that these dead carcasses carry something that is dangerous to people? Is that a reasonable assumption? We'll talk more about that as we go along. Verse 12, whatever in the water does not have fins and scales, that shall be an abomination to you. And these you shall regard as an abomination among the birds. So now we've got cloven hoofs, chew cud on the land. We've got fins and scales in the water. But then instruction about the birds of the air takes a bit different tack. And instead of giving specific characteristics, he gives examples. And then he leaves his people the responsibility to take a look at those samples and say, what do they have in common? And then we determine what characteristics make a bird clean or unclean. I mean, pretty easy. Hooves, chew cud. Fins, scales. Birds, a little bit more detail. It goes on to say, these are an abomination. Eagle, vulture, buzzard. So primarily we begin to see those that are scavengers, those that attack their food and kill it and eat it, the kite, the falcon after its kind, every raven after its kind. When do you most often see raven or crows? When you see roadkill, right? For most of us, since we're not farm dwellers, that's usually when we see a crow or a raven. Every raven after its kind. The ostrich, don't see many of those around, but nonetheless, the short-eared owl, the seagull, the hawk after its kind, the little owl, fisher owl, screech owl, white owl, jackdaw, it goes on from there. Carrion, vulture, stork, heron, all the way down through. So all of those are unclean. He doesn't take the time here to talk about, well, which ones are samples for clean. We'll look at that in Deuteronomy. Verse 20, all flying insects that creep on all fours shall be an abomination to you. And I'm very thankful about that. I'm sure you probably are as well. Yet you may eat of every flying insect that creeps on all fours, those which have jointed legs above their feet, with which to leap on the earth. So, grasshoppers, locusts, if you have a hankering, they're clean. Just go ahead. In my judgment, that would be a starvation diet when there's nothing else to eat. Verse 22, these you may eat, the locust after its kind, the destroying locust after its kind, the cricket after its kind, the grasshopper after its kind. But all other flying insects which have 4 feet shall be an abomination to you. Now, if someone is just making a list, does this make any sense at all? Well, no, it just doesn't. There has to be some insight that's being given here. Verse 24, by these you shall become unclean. Whoever touches the carcass of any of them shall be unclean until evening. Whoever carries part of the carcass of any of them shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. The carcass of any animal which divides the hoof, but is not cloven hoof, nor does chew to cud, is unclean to you. Everyone who touches it shall be unclean. There's something about their bodies that carries something that's not good for us. And so he warns us in that regard. Now, we could go on from there. He talks about creeping things like lizards and stuff like that. Don't eat those things. They're not good for you. Verse 31, these are unclean to you among all that creep. Whoever touches them when they're dead shall be unclean till the evening. What did it mean to be unclean to the evening? That means stay outside the camp. Don't have contact with other people. Take a bath before you come back. Once the sun sets, get a bath, clean up, and then come back in. So there's something about contact with these unclean animals that is not good for us. Verse 32, anything on which any of them falls when they're dead shall be unclean, whether it's an item of wood or clothing, skin or sack, whatever item. In other words, something unclean about these animals of and by themselves. And it goes on to say, if it touches anything, get rid of that. And if it does, verse 38, but if water is put on the seed, any part of such carcass, then it becomes unclean to you. So even the water that these dead things have touched, stay away from these things. Verse 41, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth shall be an abomination. It shall not be eaten. Whatever crawls on its belly, whatever goes on all fours, whatever has many feet among all creeping things that creep on the earth, like centipedes and stuff like that, don't eat them. They're an abomination. Now, how many shows are there these days, it seems, that let's go eat the grossest, creepiest, weirdest things we can. And they make shows about this. And here are these people crunching on insects and slimy things. And, well, they eat those over here in Kathmandu. Let's try that. Well, what are you doing? It's just foolishness. God says, don't do that. Verse 43, you shall not make yourselves abominable. Pause for a second. What are we saying? If we eat things on this list that are considered unclean, we make ourselves abominable before God. Now, does food have the ability to do that? No, it does not. But the attitude does. I don't care what God says. I'm going to eat what I think tastes good. And I like bacon. Have you ever noticed recently, I don't know, maybe it's just my imagination, but they seem to be putting bacon on everything these days. I mean, is that the gas station today pumping gas, and there's this advertisement for bacon ice cream? Like, seriously? Got to destroy, God's food, ice cream? I'm kidding. And put something unclean on it like that? Bacon? I mean, what is that? The attitude, if I'm going to just disregard what God says, we make ourselves abominable. You shall not make yourselves abominable with any creeping thing that creeps, nor shall you make yourselves unclean with them, lest you be defiled by them. For I am the Lord your God. I'm telling you what is good for you, what is right, what's going to be best for you, even if we don't understand it, even to this day if we don't understand all the reasons God says some things are unclean. God says, trust me, I made it, I designed it, I know what's good for you. Ever done that with your children? You know, son, don't put that in your mouth. You know, I know, trust me, it's not good for you. I am the Lord your God. You shall therefore consecrate yourselves. Consecrate yourselves. So by being obedient to the things that God has asked us to eat and to not eat, we consecrate ourselves to God. Shows that we're willing to be obedient to him. And you shall be holy, for I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourselves with any creeping thing that creeps on the earth. For I am the Lord who brings you up out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. Part of being holy is following the dietary restrictions that God provides for us. And it's not even dietary restrictions, really. I probably shouldn't even use that term. It's dietary guidelines. It's love in dietary forms. Here's what you eat that you don't want to eat. It gives us that instruction. This is the law of the animals and the birds and every living creature that moves in the waters, every creature that creeps on the earth, to distinguish between the unclean and the clean. So now we're told that they're clean and unclean. There are some things that were made unclean, and there are some things that were made or designed to be clean. And between the animal that may be eaten and the animal that may not be eaten. Now let's turn to Deuteronomy chapter 14. The second listing of this dietary guidelines, this love in dietary forms. Deuteronomy chapter 14, beginning in verse 3. Deuteronomy 14, verse 3. You shall not eat any detestable thing. Okay, God makes it very clear that these things are detestable as far as food is concerned. A number of years ago, my son had the opportunity. One of his best friends was getting married. And so they thought, since they all hunt and do various things, that it would be a great experience if the four or five guys, the best buds from medical school, they all would go to Texas and go hog hunting. Because there's a terrible problem with feral pigs in Texas. Sorry, Rebecca. Not in that area necessarily. But so you basically hire, go out there and pay somebody $100 to go shoot wild pigs. So Philip texted me a picture or two of these animals that they shot. And the text basically something like this: Dad, can you believe these guys are taking these home to eat? And he said the one that he shot, and I won't be too gross, but had festering wounds on his back of his legs that were just oozing. And he said, they're going to take these things home and eat them. why would you do that? They're detestable. And again, they form their proper place in the creation, in the ecosystem, we might say in today's terminology. They have their proper place, but food is not one of them. These are the animals, verse 4, which you may eat. Now in Deuteronomy, instead of saying first hooves and cud, he said, let me give you some samples, some examples. These are the things you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat. What do those three have in common? They chew cud and they have a split hoof. Pretty obvious. The deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, the wild goat, the antelope, the mountain sheep. What do they all have in common? Split hoof, chew the cud, right? Verse 6, and you may eat every animal with cloven hooves. So they weren't aware of bison yet. But when Israel might come in contact with bison or moose or caribou or whatever it might be, they would understand, oh, has a cloven hoof, it chews cud, they're okay. Having the hoof split into two parts and that chews the cud among the animals. Nevertheless, those that chew the cud or have cloven hooves, you shall not eat. In other words, if they only have one but not the other, don't eat them. And he gives more examples. The camel, the hare, the rock hyrax, for they chew the cud, but do not have cloven hooves. They are unclean to you. Also, by the way, the swine is unclean for you. Now, why does God specifically pick out that animal of all the others? I don't know the answer to that question, but it's pretty obvious. Remember when my brother Steve was learning German in high school? Schweine, I guess, is the German word. I know what that one is. It's the pig, you bet. Also, the swine is unclean for you because it has cloven hooves, yet it does not chew the cud. You shall not eat their flesh or touch their dead carcasses. Now, isn't it true that you can clean up a pig? Yeah. You can keep a pig in a barn. Keep it clean. Does that change the nature of the body of the pig? No, it just means it's a clean pig as opposed to a dirty pig. The body is still the same. The process of processing food is still the same. When we only feed our pigs corn, we don't feed them dead carcasses. Does that make a difference in the way they process food? In fact, it's interesting to note that pigs' stomachs are very much like human stomachs. Highly acidic, very different from those animals that have a cloven hoof and chew cud. This is why some geneticists grow some spare parts for human beings. Where? You guessed it, on pigs. Interesting to note some of those things. I won't go into those details here. It's not the point of the sermon, but this is what you should eat. Verse 9, these you may eat of all that are in the waters. You may eat all that have fins and scales. And whatever does not have fins and scales, you shall not eat. It is unclean for you. Now, a small bit of advice. You can figure this all out yourselves. If you don't know whether something has fins or scales, don't eat it. So maybe it had scales at one time, maybe it didn't. Maybe it's just better to steer clear of those things. You don't have to worry about it. If it's got fins and scales, when it's alive, before you cook it, it's okay. All clean birds you may eat, But these you shall not eat: the eagle, vulture, buzzard, red kite, falcon, kites after their kind, raven after its kind, ostrich, owl, seagull, hawk after their kind, little owl, screech owl. In other words, we look at the animals that God, let's say, gave to give as sacrifices of the birds. Dove. So one of the primary things God expects then his people to do is take a look at the characteristics of these birds that are listed as unclean. Take a look at the characteristics of the dove that God said you can offer on my altar as a sacrifice. And we contrast their characteristics to get a list of what is clean as far as the bird kind are concerned. And that's a very reasonable thing to do. Verse 19, also every creeping thing that flies is unclean for you. They shall not be eaten, etc., etc. And it goes through the list pretty much the same way then as it is in the book of Leviticus. Now, if the concept of clean and unclean meats was first introduced in Leviticus chapter 11, I'd like you to turn back to Leviticus chapter 5. I mean, we have Leviticus, and then about 40 years later, we have the book of Deuteronomy. And many people will say the concept of clean and unclean meats was introduced by Moses in Leviticus chapter 11. And from that time forward, certain things were supposed to be eaten and other things were not allowed to be eaten. Notice Leviticus chapter 5. In verse 1, if a person sins in hearing the utterance of an oath and is a witness, whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt. In other words, if you hear someone make a promise and then you watch them break that promise and you don't say anything about it, you're guilty as well. Verse 2, or if a person touches any unclean thing. Well, wait a second. If Moses invented clean and unclean in Leviticus chapter 11, how can we have references here to something that's unclean six chapters earlier? If any person touches an unclean thing, whether it is the carcass of an unclean beast, so all we have in Leviticus 11 is an official listing of what was already understood. If you touch the carcass of an unclean beast, or the carcass of unclean livestock, or the carcass of unclean creeping things, and he is unaware of it, he shall also be unclean and guilty. So it goes on to talk about how you make yourself clean again after you've touched these things. So the point is, there was a general understanding of what was clean and unclean prior to Leviticus chapter 5. And I know some of you are thinking of another scripture that we'll cover a little bit later on. Let's go on to a second point. I didn't mean to belabor that too long. Second point, God created some animals for food and some for cleanup. God created some animals for food and some for cleanup. We are not prejudiced against pigs. We like pigs in their proper environment, doing their job. We're not prejudiced against clams or mussels or crabs or lobsters. We really like them doing their job out there in the environment, but they're not to be eaten. I'd like to read a few quotes to you. David Meinz, M-E-I-N-Z, in his book, Eating by the Book, in other words, by the Bible, summarizes the potential health risk of eating creatures the Bible classifies as unclean. Quote, almost all of the creatures on the unclean list are scavengers, he notes. In many cases, they don't hunt for their own food. They eat the dead and decaying matter of our environment. That's their job. They are the clean-uppers. They're the garbage men, we might say. A catfish does that at the bottom of a pond. Anybody met catfish fishing? How do you catch catfish? All right, throw this lump in there, let it sink to the bottom, and they eventually find it and swallow it, and then you got them. That's how you fish for catfish. Well, unless you're one of those southern boys that goes and catches them by hand. I mean, giant, how do they catch these giant catfish? They just stick their hand in the catfish's mouth, like up to their elbow, and then pull this thing out from under the slime. It's unbelievable. Nonetheless, Catfish does this at the bottom of the pond. Lobsters and shrimp do it in the ocean. A pig will eat anything. Vultures, almost by definition, are known for their scavenger habits. Some of you may remember the Disney movie where the vultures are singing this song in Barbershop Quartet. And one of the things in the Jungle Book, they sing, "We never met an animal we didn't like." It's just kind of this play on words, you know. We'll eat any dead animal that is out there. Dr. Rex Russell, in his book, What the Bible Says About Healthy Living, notes that, quote, "The differences between clean and unclean animals appear to be related to their primary food source and to their digestive systems. You can feed a pig grain, but it doesn't change the animal." Scavengers that eat anything and everything are not suitable for food, according to the Bible. Animals described as clean and therefore good for food primarily eat grasses and grains. But note that an animal doesn't have to be a scavenger to be unclean. Horses and rabbits, for example, are unclean because they do not have split hooves. Although they are considered to be good food in some countries, we have a neighbor across the street that his widow still lives there. Ivan was his name. He offered me on several occasions to have us over for paprikash. It's this Eastern European dish. And my wife grew up eating chicken paprikash, a very tasty dish. Ivan made it out of rabbit. So he had hutches in the back of the property there. And he said, "Come on over." "Oh," I said, "No, Ivan, I do not eat rabbits." "Oh, you don't know, they taste so good." "I don't care how they taste, my friend. I'm not eating your rabbit, you know." Although they're considered to be good food in some countries, studies have shown that horse meat often contains viruses and parasites. Rabbits, as innocent as they appear, are the cause of tularemia, which is an infectious disease. It affects the lungs and other things along the way in humans. Now, it's rare, of course, to get that from rabbits, but one of the reasons God says don't eat it. One reason for God's rule forbidding pork, he continues, this is Rex Russell, is that the digestive system of a pig is completely different from that of a cow. Frankly, it's similar to ours in that the stomach is very acidic. Pigs are gluttonous, never knowing when to stop eating. No comment. America, 2018. Their stomach acids become diluted because of the volume of food, allowing all kinds of vermin to pass through this protective barrier. Parasites, bacteria, viruses, and toxins can pass into the pig's flesh because of overeating. These toxins and infectious agents can be passed on to humans when they eat a pig's flesh. That's from pages 76 and 77 in his book. Dr. Russell's supporting evidence for his views isn't for the faint of heart. He writes this, quote, "In the United States, three of the six most common foodborne parasitic diseases of humans are associated with pork consumption. Quote, it has been long recognized that the meat of shellfish, shrimp, crabs, lobsters, etc., is especially dangerous. Many illnesses, including instant paralysis, devastate some people every day as a result of eating shellfish. The largest cholera outbreak in the United States occurred in Louisiana from August through October 1986. The symptoms of cholera are explosive diarrhea, leading to rapid dehydration, unconsciousness, hypotension, and death." That's low blood pressure. Incubation for cholera is 2 hours to 3 days. So once you get that bacteria inside of you, it rapidly runs through. "What did the stricken people eat?" he writes. "The incriminating meals were found to include," because, by the way, cholera is almost never passed person to person. It's almost always passed through, frankly, contaminated water, where someone has eaten something, gotten the cholera, then because of their excretions into the water system and things like that, other people drink that water, contaminated, and it just can be a massive outbreak. Very, very rare in the United States, by the way, but much more common elsewhere. Probably 100,000 people may have been infected with cholera in Haiti after the earthquake in 2010. Just a massive outbreak there, again, because of the water problems. The incriminating meals were found to include rice noodles with shrimp, pork, vegetable, mussel soup, pig blood coagulated with vinegar, and salty brine shrimp with mixed vegetables. Shellfish can be placed in a body of water that is contaminated, he writes, with cholera bacteria, and they will purify the water. That's their job. We used to teach the kids at camp. You know, some things are just not fit to eat. Would you go up to the pool and reach into the pool filter and grab that slime and start eating it? Oh, pool filter, that's so good. Well, that's what you're doing when you eat a crab, when you eat an oyster, when you eat a mussel. You're eating the filters that God has placed in these bodies of water to clean them up, to keep them clean. Shrimp, oysters, crabs, scallops, and mussels are particularly efficient at this. They filter large volumes of water every single day. Sewage laden with chemicals, toxins, and harmful bacteria, parasites, and viruses become concentrated in those shellfish. The cause of cholera outbreaks in several areas has been traced to contaminated shrimp, crabs, oysters, and clams. In Florida, there was an outbreak in 2010 after the Haitian earthquake. Haitians moved over, brought cholera with them, had been infected there. The only non-Haitian directly come from Haiti to have this cholera was an individual who imported conch meat. Conch are those big shells, you know, the ones that look so cool on your mantle or places like that. They eat those all the time in the Caribbean. They had imported conch meat and didn't cook it properly and got cholera as a result. So he writes, reading all this, you might not be surprised to learn that the state legislature of California proposed a law requiring the food industry to label shellfish with a message warning, quote, this food may be dangerous to your health. Why? In a single year, 50 deaths and many hospitalizations have been caused by eating shellfish. Now, what purpose do unclean animals serve? If such creatures were designed to be eaten, why did God create them if they weren't designed to be eaten? Dr. Russell explains this, quote, for one thing, they serve a useful role just cleaning up the place. Many unclean animals, however, notably pigs and shellfish, are unhealthy because their diet consists of society's disease-laden refuse. It's well known that pigs will eat anything and everything. They were designed to clean up the decaying flesh and pollution. Pigs have eaten Philadelphia's garbage and sewage for more than 100 years, saving the city $3 million a year in landfill costs. They feed the pigs first and then take what's left to the landfill. It's fascinating. It's a great cost saver. This is a wise use of hogs. They're designed to clean our environment. Even when stacked in cages, piglets thrive on offal, which is guts and refuse and things like that, when only the pig in the top cage receives food. Not done here in America, but is done elsewhere in the world. Farmers have increased their profits by feeding free raw sewage to pigs in some nations. Chicken farmers often keep a hog so they can dispose of dead chickens without having to bury them. Some species of fish and shellfish perform similar roles in an aquatic environment. Dr. Russell notes that, quote, among commonly eaten fish, catfish always show the highest levels of contamination in chemically polluted water. Even commercially raised catfish are a potential health risk, he notes. Consumer Reports tested fish bought in multiple markets in the U.S. Fish are considered spoiled when bacteria counts are greater than 10 million per gram of flesh. Nearly all catfish had counts that went off the scale at 27 million per gram, even when properly prepared. So catfish serve a wonderful purpose, but they're not to be eaten. So it is clear that God defines what is clean and unclean, and he created these creatures for a very good purpose, but simply not to be eaten. So point number three, unclean did not start with Moses. Unclean did not start with Moses. Turn to Genesis chapter 6. This is a scripture I referred to earlier that all of you were probably thinking of. Yet he's got to get to Genesis 6 in verse 19. During the time of Noah, God said to Noah, verse 13, "The end of all flesh has come before me. The earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." So you know the story. Make yourself an ark. I'll save you in it. I'm going to flood the entire earth and kill all the humans on the earth. The things that survive on the land will be in the ark with you. Other than that, they won't survive. Verse 19, "Of every living thing, of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of course, of the birds after their kind, two of all flesh. Birds after their kind, animals after their kind, of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind, two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive." Noah didn't have to go out and trap or catch them. God simply brought them into the ark. "And you shall take for yourselves," verse 21, "of all food that is eaten, gather it to yourself. It shall be food for you and for them." Interesting. God told Noah to pack a lunch that would last a year. Pack some food. "Thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him." So verse 1 of chapter 7, "Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You shall take with you seven each of every clean animal." Never before in the scripture was clean associated with an animal. Yet, within the first, 1,500 years of history, God told Noah, take seven each. Now, most scholars will say seven each referred to seven pairs of every clean animal. So actually, there were probably 14 of each clean animal and two each of the unclean animals. So take seven each of every clean animal, male and his female, so that seems to be seven pairs, two each of the animals that are unclean, a male and his female. Isn't it interesting that fewer unclean were to be taken on the ark? Now, we could talk a lot about that and why God said to do that. Obviously, he wanted to be sure that once the ark landed, there were plenty of pairs to be able to reproduce for food because humanity would need to eat. They would need to eat clean things. The unclean would take care of themselves. They'd be able to reproduce. It's interesting that often they have a higher reproduction rate than clean animals, which is interesting of and by itself. The point is, God did not, at this point, at all explain to Noah what was clean and what was unclean. How did he know? How did he know? Well, it must have been common knowledge because God simply said, oh, by the way, seven pairs of clean, one pair of unclean. So this was something from creation that God had taught Adam and had been passed down to the time of Noah. So he didn't have to ask, wait a second. What do you mean clean? I have to give seven pairs of animals a bath? Obviously, he understood what was clean and unclean. So it didn't begin with Moses. It didn't start with the old covenant, quote unquote. It started at creation. God created some animals from the beginning that were clean and others that were clearly unclean. So we understand from the very beginning of creation, God labels some things clean and some things unclean. Now, again, as we go through this, let's cover a fourth point, and we'll begin to tie this into the spiritual point that we're kind of aiming toward. The fourth point is this: Jesus didn't eat pigs. If you want someone as your example, Christ certainly foremost is claimed to be the example. Jesus didn't eat pigs. It's interesting. A nice chat late yesterday afternoon. Our daughter and son-in-law had a get-together to welcome Leonor officially. So Frederick invited people from his work, Melissa from her work, people from the neighborhood. And my wife had chatted with this woman earlier, and then I had a chance to chat with her, and she said, well, your wife mentioned that you're a pastor. I said, yes, I am. It's a Church of God. And she said, oh, that's... we started chatting a little bit, and she said, you know, I'm Catholic, but I've always wondered, you know, Jesus was a Jew. And I don't think we put enough emphasis on that. And I said, you know what? You're right. I said, that's why tomorrow is our worship day, starting at sunset through sunset tomorrow night. We keep the same day that Jesus kept. And that's why we don't keep Christmas and Easter, because we do the same days that Jesus kept. And of course, all of a sudden it's like, what? So it gave her, I'm sure, it's a very pleasant conversation, very reasonable, but I'm sure it gave her something to think about and probably will from this time forward. I didn't get to the point, you know, I'm not eating that salami over there, because Jesus didn't eat that either. You know, that's pig. He didn't eat pigs. We didn't quite get to that level. But Jesus didn't eat pigs. He was a Jew. Never once was he confronted by the Pharisees saying, why are you eating these unclean things? Now, how about the explanation that the only reason Jesus didn't eat pigs is because he was a Jew? I mean, you heard that before, right? Oh, well, why didn't he teach people? He taught them everything else. He threw out all kinds of Pharisaic regulations about washing hands, having separate bowls for this and that. He threw those things right out the window. He talked with Gentiles. Actually sat at a well and chit-chatted with a Gentile woman of all things. He was throwing out all kinds of Pharisaic regulations. If it was simply a silly Jewish law, why didn't Christ have those tax collectors over for some short ribs? You know, come on. We're throwing out those regulations. Let's get rid of those too. Christ was never confronted about eating unclean things. He never ate anything unclean. In fact, it was clear when there was a demon situation, remember what he did? Demon said, you know, please don't make us wander out there all by ourselves. Send us into those pigs. Jesus said, sir, sure. 2,000, or was it 10,000? 2,000 pigs destroyed all at once. Now, these are these precious little animals. Why would he do that? Didn't send him into a herd of cattle. Didn't send him into a herd of deer or moose or buffalo or bison or whatever. Pigs, because they're pretty disposable. Now imagine the stench in that lagoon. It's like a lagoon in North Carolina or Iowa or some parts of Texas where they have massive pig farms. What do you do with all this waste? Well, you pump it into this big hole called a lagoon, and you let it just rot there. Keep pumping water in. Hopefully, as the water evaporates, that takes care of a lot of that, but there's stench. And then, of course, you have the floods like Florence, and all of a sudden, you've got these giant, I mean massive, hundreds of thousands of gallons of swill that gets flooded, and then it pollutes the entire waterways all the way out to the ocean. They're praying, actually, some were praying for more rain during Florence. Why would you want more rain when you've already got terrible flooding? It's so they didn't have lawsuits because of the stench and the filth that has now polluted all the waterways, and they're hoping for more and more rain to hopefully flush this stuff out to the ocean where they can't be prosecuted for it. It's terrible. I mean, massive. I mean, pigs outnumber people in North Carolina like 20 to 1 or 29 to 1. It's massive operations. Tens of thousands of pigs in a single facility. Just unbelievable. Because we love our bacon in America, we're going to eat it no matter what. Christ did not eat pigs. Point number 5, the apostles did not eat pigs. The apostles did not eat pigs. Acts chapter 10 is very clear. Maybe we could take just a moment to turn there. Peter is given this vision. Remember the vision? Had nothing to do, frankly, with eating unclean things. But many people try to make this into something about eating pigs or other clean things. Here in Acts chapter 10, Cornelius, quote-unquote, an unclean Gentile, centurion. He was uncircumcised, therefore he was unclean. He was still a Gentile. As much of a God-fearer as he was still in the Jewish mind unclean because he was not circumcised. And yet, he was a better Jew, we might say, than most Jews in his dedication to God, in his giving to others. God was making a point now with the church that this man is going to be a part of the church, and all Gentiles like him will be a part of the church, every much a part of the church as any Jewish individual. So he was unclean. Paul, or I should say Peter, was going to be taught that you can't call this person unclean just because of a genetic heritage. So, verse 10, maybe verse 9. The next day as they went on their journey, drew near to the city, Peter went up on the housetop to pray. About the sixth hour, he became very hungry, wanted to eat. But while they made ready, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven opened and an object like a great sheet bound at the four corners descend to him and let down to the earth. So you got this upside down parachute that's let down. And in it were all kinds of four-footed animals of the earth, wild beasts, creeping things, birds of the air. A voice came to him, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." Peter said, "Not so, Lord. I have never eaten anything common or unclean." Never. This is years after Christ's crucifixion. If Christ said, "Eat whatever you want," that silly discussion of clean and unclean back in the Old Testament doesn't apply anymore. If that's what Christ intended, why didn't he tell them? And why didn't Peter, who above all the apostles, we might say, yearned to be obedient to Christ, why didn't he start eating creepy things? Why didn't he? Well, because he knew some things were created to be eaten, others were not. "I have never eaten anything common or unclean." And a voice spoke to him a second time, "What God has cleansed, you must not call common." Well, there you have it. God has cleaned all foods, and therefore, you can eat them now. Is that what God cleansed? Not at all. Not at all. Down to verse 28. Verse 27, he talked with him, went in and found many who had come together, Cornelius and all his family and others, all Gentiles, all unclean, all uncircumcised. And he said to them, "You know how unlawful it is for a Jewish man to keep company with," I shouldn't even be here according to Jewish tradition, "or go to one of another nation." I mean, I'm actually in your house. Talk about being unclean. "But God has shown me that I should not call any swine, seagull, hawk, raven, roadkill, common or unclean." Is that what he says? Of course not. The principle of the vision was not to tell him you can eat whatever you want. The principle is you should never call another human being made in God's image common or unclean. That's the principle. So the apostles didn't eat pigs. Peter would go on saying, "I have never eaten anything common or unclean." For the rest of his life, he'd say that. Now we have these principles. God defines what is good to eat, what is not. Moses didn't start it with the old covenant. Christ didn't eat pigs. The apostles didn't eat pigs. There are other things that are unclean. What's the point? What's the point? We mentioned earlier that sometimes the laws of clean and unclean might be the best kept laws in the church of God. Why is that the case? Because it's easy. It really is. It's easy. Don't eat pork. Stay away from pork. Check the ingredients on the can. Check the ingredients on the bottle. It's got pig in it. It's got lobster in it. It's got clam sauce. We don't eat it. Pretty simple, right? So people can deceive themselves saying, "Well, I don't eat those things. Therefore, God must be pleased with me." Well, I'm sure God is pleased that we're doing that. But as we said earlier, there are those who haven't kept the way of God for decades and yet still do not eat pigs. You think, what is the point? You see, the laws of clean and unclean are simply symbolic for our entire dedication to God. Yes, it is for us to be unlike the world. It is for us to be separated from the world. It's for us to be clean spiritually as opposed to unclean. So in our physical diets, we try to the best of our ability to reflect our spiritual stance toward our Father in heaven. We want to be holy. We want to be clean. We want to be free of the pollutions of this world. Now, it is a law. God gives us a law to eat carefully, to eat properly. So we want to be sure that we understand that it's a representation of our entire relationship with God. It cannot be isolated out. Those people out there in the world who don't eat these things aren't more righteous just because they don't eat them. If they don't follow all the other things that frankly are far more important than this. Christ talked about foods. If you look in Mark chapter 7, we'll close here. Mark chapter 7. While eating the things that God says are clean and avoiding the things that God says are unclean is important, Christ gives us the understanding of the real principle spiritually behind this. And that is the state of not the stomach, but the state of the heart. That's what God is interested in. It's what Christ was interested in. Verse 1, judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will... I'm sorry, I'm in Matthew. Let me go to Mark. Say, that doesn't sound like what I'm looking for. There we go, Mark 7. There we are. Then the Pharisees and some scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem. Now when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled... that is, unwashed hands, they found fault. You can do some research sometime if you'd like about how they were supposed to wash their hands to be ceremonially clean. They didn't do it. They might have had some dirt left on their hands. For the Pharisees and all Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other things which they have received and hold, like the washing of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. And then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? It's a tradition of the elders. It's not God's law. It's what they made up. He answered and said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy, you honor me with your lips, but you worship in vain, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. You lay those aside, all too well we reject the commandment. For Moses said, and we'll go on from there, let's drop down to verse 13, making the word of God not effect through your own tradition. Verse 14, when he called all the multitude himself, he said, hear me everyone and understand. There is nothing that enters a man from the outside, which can defile him. What is he saying? Does he say that there's nothing that enters from the outside that cannot make you sick? Doesn't say that. There's nothing that enters a man which can defile him. In other words, you can't make yourself spiritually unclean by something you eat. Now, what if you eat a bowl full of arsenic? You're going to die. Well, you won't be spiritually defiled, but you'll die. There's some things that are good to put in your mouth, some things that are not good to put in your mouth. But the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man. So yes, what you eat is important, but the state of the heart is what is most important. So what we eat is a reflection and should be a reflection of the state of our heart. We want to be clean. Verse 18. He said to the disciples, are you thus without understanding? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him? Because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach. Let's say you got some dirt on your hands. It's eliminated, purifying all foods. In other words, get some dirt on your hands. You eat it. You have a digestive system that cleans it out. That's what your digestive system is for. Cleans out those things. Thus purifying all foods. Get a little dirt on your hands, eat it, your digestive system. Now, does this mean you can eat pigs? Are they now somehow purified? Is their stomach now non-acid anymore, like yours? Well, of course not. It doesn't change a thing about them. He's saying, look, you get a little dirt on your hands, you got a system to take care of that. Should you eat unclean things? No. What was Christ's emphasis, though? He said, what comes out of a man, that defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, etc. thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within and defile a man. So you might have these Pharisees who are very meticulous about what they eat and how they wash their hands, but they are filthy, spiritually speaking. So as important as we might sometimes think clean and unclean meats are, do not obsess about clean and unclean. I mean, people spend hours on the internet. Does this particular candy have a trace of porcine juices? Oh my. Leave it alone. Read the label. If it says pig, don't eat it. Pretty obvious. Now again, health issues are something we could tackle at another time. But don't obsess about that. If there's something to obsess about, it's this. It's the state of our heart. That's what God is most interested in. Yes, we keep the laws of clean and unclean. They're good and they're right. But they're meant to be a representation of our spiritual state, not to be kept in a target all by themselves or a jar all by themselves on the side. So, brethren, our fundamental belief number 14, biblical food laws, says this. Meat, identified as unclean in the Bible, is not to be consumed by humans. Lists of clean and unclean meats are found in God's instructions concerning what should and should not be eaten in Leviticus chapter 11 and Deuteronomy 14. So, brethren, let's be eating clean, both physically and, more importantly, spiritually.